From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you so much. We got a fun show for you today. We got Billy Collins, the poet with the folksiest name since Sylvie O'Plath, and he's the former U.S. Poet Laureate. Now, we're very excited to have an actual poet on our show, because as you all know, metered verse plays a large role on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. In fact, Carl has prepared a special ode to welcome Mr. Collins.
There once was a poet from Nantucket.
That'll do, Carl. That'll do, because poetry, after all, is built on subtlety. If you'd like to have Carl recite anything you like on your outgoing message, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
This is Gary Varner from Bryan, Texas.
Hey, Gary, how are things in Bryan, Texas?
Well, they're pretty much East Texas-y.
What do you do there?
Well, I'm a professor of philosophy at Texas A&M University, which I want to emphasize is in our neighboring city of College Station, Texas.
Right. So you're in Bryan, you're calling. Now, Texas A&M, the Aggies, yes?
Yes. Fighting yes. Texas Aggies.
Famous for football, and one of your famous alumni is the governor, or the former, current governor of Texas, Rick Perry.
Yeah.
Yeah. You take any of your classes in philosophy?
I was just going to ask.
Way before my time.
Oh, absolutely.
I've been here 23 years.
Yeah. Well, let me introduce you to our panel, Gary. First up, a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning and the host of SiriusXM's daily news and notes show on the Entertainment Weekly channel. It's Faith Saley.
Howdy, Gary.
Next, the comedian who will be performing at the Carolina Theater in Durham, North Carolina on December 6th. It's Paula Poundstone.
Hey, Gary.
Finally, a humorist and blogger who will be appearing with Storytellers on a Mission on November 14th in Brattleboro, Vermont, it's Tom Baudette.
Hello, Gary.
Gary, you are going to start us off with Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle, of course, is going to recreate for you three quotations in the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you'll win our prize. Carl's voice on your outgoing message, voicemail, home answering machine, whatever you got. Ready to play?
Yeah, let's go.
Let's do it. Here's your first quote.
To the best of your knowledge, has a man ever had a baby?
That was one of the many pressing questions asked of Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius at a hearing this week exploring the disastrous rollout of what?
The Obamacare website, which had some personal financial information problems.
It did. It had all kinds of problems. Yes, the Obamacare website. Very good. Yes, you did a good job. The congresswoman who asked if men can have babies was Republican Renee Elmers of North Carolina, who was either asking about a provision in Obamacare that forces single men to buy insurance with maternity care, or she was fact-checking her husband's explanation of where that new baby came from.
I was dubious that it was as bad as they said. So, and I do have insurance. But I went online, and I went directly there, and it said, you know, individual or business. I clicked individual, and it went to the scene, and it asked for some information. So I'm just seeing how it goes. And by the time I was done, I'd given them two of my credit cards, and I'd canceled my current insurance, even though I liked it. And it worked great.
But you already had insurance, and you weren't really going to buy insurance from the exchange?
No, I was just seeing how the website worked.
Well, it's guys like you that are mucking it up.
I know. It's true.
It's rubberneckers, gawkers like you. Let the people who need it go use it.
I do the same thing on Amazon.
I kind of found Sebelius' performance to be inspiring because when she started doing the eye rolling, at one point she was like, whatever.
She didn't say that. She was like, whatever.
I too can testify in front of Congress someday.
You know, when years ago, I used to get this from, like, my union. They used to send a thing offering me this insurance, and I thought, you know, I should get that. It seemed responsible, you know. I'll sign up for that insurance. And then it turned out that it covered almost nothing. But I didn't know that. I just thought I was doing a good thing. I had auto insurance one point that was so limited that it was if my agent hit my car.
Only yeah. him.
Legally, he had to apologize. Right. That was...
I had personal injury insurance one time. My head had to actually come off. There was a decal, but it had to be completely off
before they would kick in.
Before the decapitation clause would come into play.
Yeah, and then you had to be able to fill out a form after it came off.
Let me just check in with Gary to see if he's still awake. Gary, you still awake?
Still here.
All right, awesome.
You know why Gary's still here? Because he's a philosophy guy.
He's rolling this over.
He's used to people droning on. All right. Gary?
Yeah.
Gary, that's not how I meant it.
All right.
That was strictly Peter.
Gary, your next quote is from an NSA official.
We're really screwed now.
That official was reacting to the, shall we say, unhappiness expressed when news came out this week that the NSA has been spying on whom?
Yahoo and Google?
Very good, yes. Yahoo and Google. We're just going to say Google, because who cares about Yahoo? The Washington Post reported this week that the NSA figured out a way to tap into the lines that connect Google and Yahoo's data servers and their users. The operation was called Muscular, which is just, you know, wishful thinking on the part of the NSA IT guys. Their previous project was called Operation Has a Girlfriend. Now, here's the thing, though. I mean, the NSA, we've been hearing all this stuff. They've been tapping all of our phones. Big deal. We all text anyway. Now they went after Google. Nobody messes with Google and gets away with it. So just look for stories of NSA operatives drowning because Google Maps told them that the nearest Starbucks was 4 miles offshore. Okay? All right, Gary, here is your last quote.
I've been alive since probably 1988, and I haven't seen them win a game six since now.
That was a Boston man after celebrating quite intensely for a few hours after whose big win this week?
The Red Sox.
Yes, indeed. The Red Sox victory in six games will make Red Sox fans even more insufferable, which physicists had said was not possible. Once the Red Sox were perennial losers, with pretentious fans who invoked them as a metaphor for the futility of all human endeavor. Now they're the Yankees with beards.
But it's time for them to shave, right? They shave now. They won.
Well,
I shaved when they won.
Well, I appreciate that. I think it would have been very disturbing to see you walk in like David Ross. That would have been very upsetting.
You know, Johnny Cash said that he was going to wear black until the Vietnam War was over. And then when the Vietnam War was over, he didn't stop wearing black.
No, then he said it was about prison, guys in prison, right?
Yeah.
No, then he just said, I look good in black.
Yeah. I got a lot invested in my wardrobe. Yeah.
Carl, how did Gary do in our quiz?
Gary, you had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your answering machine or voicemail.
Well done, Gary. Thank you for playing. Before we move on, last week in the show, we presented a made-up story in our Bluff the Listener game about union members in Poland fighting over who would replace a light bulb, right? So they basically reenacted the classic, how many Poles does it take to screw in a light bulb joke? Members of the greater Polish community were not amused by this and let us know. So to make amends, what we're going to do is to invite a Polish-American onto our show to allow him to make jokes about us. So comedian and improviser T.J. Jagodowski is on the line now. T.J., hello?
Yes, hello.
Hello. You are a proud Polish-American, is that right?
Without a doubt. At least half of me is.
And so did you, like all Polish-Americans, take offense at our little attempt at humor last week?
Yeah, well, I'm half Polish, half Irish, so half of me was offended, and the other was half was too drunk to care.
I understand. All right, so what we've done is we've decided turnabout is fair play, so NPR people were making fun of Poles. You, a Pole, can now make fun of NPR people. Go for it.
All right, well, get ready to get stung.
Here we go.
This is not, first of all, easy for me to do because I love NPR. It somehow manages to be self-important and irrelevant.
There you are. We do both.
What's the hardest part about being an NPR listener?
What is the hardest part of being an NPR listener?
Getting reception in your coffin.
Ooh.
Do you guys know that the Cliffs of Dover are the only things older and whiter than you are?
That stung a little.
Okay. All right. I'll let you off the hook with this one. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Cool, young, new NPR listeners.
Cool, young NPR listeners who?
Exactly.
Ladies and gentlemen, T.J. Jagodowski, proud son of Poland, one of the stars of T.J. and Dave at Chicago's I.O. Theater. T.J., thank you so much. We deserved that.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bye-bye.
I started a joke, which started the whole world crying. But I didn't see that the joke was on me.
Thank you so much. Right now, it is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Natalie from Santa Rosa, California.
Oh, I know Santa Rosa. Beautiful there, north of San Francisco.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's fantastic.
And what do you do there?
I'm a student at Santa Rosa Junior College.
Oh, Santa Rosa Junior College. What are you studying?
Social and behavioral sciences.
Social and behavioral sciences, so how people behave in certain ways?
They do studies, Peter.
I know! Do you do studies about how people behave?
Yeah, I'd love to do that.
That would be great, because, frankly, we just make them up. Natalie, it's nice to have you with us. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Natalie's topic?
Wait, wait, don't Dell me.
The Dell Computer Company has been facing a lot of problems lately, mostly because it doesn't make iPhones or iPads. Nobody wants to buy their computers. This week we read about yet another problem threatening the fortunes of the company. Guess the real story, you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to try this?
Ready.
All right, your first story of problems at Dell comes from Faith Saley.
Remember the year 2000? Y2K turned out to be less scary than your low-rise jeans, and you couldn't escape that blonde guy telling us, dude, you're getting a Dell. Well, the marketing geniuses at Dell figure today's world is so fast-moving that their old slogan, dude, you're getting a Dell, now has a cool vintage vibe. This was a coup for Ben Curtis, a.k.a. the Dell guy, who lost his gig in 2003 when he was arrested for buying marijuana while he happened to be wearing a kilt. But in a huge buzzkill for Mr. Curtis, this rebooted campaign has been booted with a cease and desist order. Why? Because in the new commercial, after the Dell guy predictably announces, dude, you're getting a Dell, he unpredictably presents the customer with a life-size cutout of English chanteuse Adele. Then he hurls the cardboard Adele aside, brandishes a PC, and says, JK, you're totally getting a Dell. Adele's lawyer, Nigel Bertram, explains that while Adele was an unknown tween during Dell's heyday in the aughts, quote, Dell Inc. cannot now capitalize homophonically on the fame of my client. When reached for comment, the Dell guy said, dude, I've never been a homophone.
They try to use their old slogan, dude, you're getting Adele, and Adele objects. Your next story of a crisis at Dell Computer comes from Tom Baudette.
Early adopters of high-tech devices are used to finding a few bugs in their new toys, but no one was prepared for what they discovered in their Dell Android tablets released this month. When users hold down the command button for 3 seconds, the official logo of the NSA appears on the screen. An electronic voice addresses them by name, and then in a cross between Clippy and an FBI probe says, Melissa, I see from your web searches you like travel and gossip. If you would like to hear recorded conversations of the King of Norway, say oofda. To listen to Benjamin Netanyahu order sushi, say oi. If you want to hear Angela Merkel and who doesn't, say das risky. Dell has had to recall over a million devices with the bug, which has been traced to a disgruntled ex-programmer. Our call center has been overwhelmed, said customer care manager Rita Ramirez, and when the hold message reminds people this call may be recorded to ensure their satisfaction, we lose most of them.
A hack makes Dell computers light up with the NSA logo and a rather distressing comic message. Your last story of yet another Dell debacle comes from Paula Poundstone.
A number of Dell users have complained that their Latitude 6430U Ultra books smell of cat urine. A few weeks ago, I got a new Latitude 6430U for work, one user complained on Dell's hardware support forum. The machine is great, but it smells as if it was assembled near a Tomcat's litter box. It's truly awful. The user forum carried many such user tales of woe. Although surely some cat lovers rejoiced at the first computer to show cat videos in Smell-O-Rama. The problem lay in the manufacturing process, which has now been changed, the company said. The smell is not related to cat urine or any other type of biological contaminant, nor is it a health hazard, purred Dell support technician Steve B., before licking his paw. If you order a E6430U now, it will not have the issue. Presumably, if you order the Dell FPISS now, it'll go for a low, low price.
All right. So one of these bad things happened to Dell Computer. Was it from Faith Silly, their new ad campaign, you got to get a Dell, get stopped by a Dell? Was it from Tom Baudet, the story of how an disgruntled programmer made the computers light up with the NSA logo? Or from Paula Poundstone, how users were complaining that their Dell laptops smelled like cat urine?
I think it's number one.
You think it's Faith's story of how they wanted to bring back the slogan, you gotta get Adele, and the singer Adele objected?
Yes, I'm gonna go with that.
You're gonna go with that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we spoke to someone familiar with the real story.
If I opened a laptop box and thought that I had opened a litter box, I'm pretty sure I would pass out.
That was Joanne Stern. She's the tech editor at ABC News talking about the Dell laptops that smelled strongly of cat urine. So I'm sorry. As unbelievable as it may be, Paula was telling the truth.
But thanks, Natalie.
And Faith misled you in her wily way. You didn't win, but you did earn a point for Faith. And maybe inspire Dell to bring back that slogan anyway. What the heck? Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Meow, 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 meow.
And now the game where we ask somebody who has accomplished a lot to try his hand at accomplishing one more thing. It's called Not My Job. Billy Collins is the most acclaimed poet in America today. He was the country's poet laureate from 2001 to 2003. Now, we could try to describe what his poetry is like aesthetically, but this is 21st century America. So let's just say that poetry is just like song lyrics, except they don't rhyme and you talk them. Billy Collins, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
It's great to be here. Thank you. That's not a bad description.
I think so. The first thing I have to ask is, did you find that a folksy, friendly name like Billy Collins was an obstacle to you in your poetry career?
No, well, I actually adopted that name because there is a romantic poet, English romantic poet, whose name is William Collins.
Really?
So, actually, I'll just tell you, your audience can't listen to that on the radio, but when I was in college, I thought you needed to have a very literary name, so I called myself W. James Collins.
That's what I would expect.
Yeah, but then I downshifted to Billy because there is a William, and also I just got more relaxed with my poetry, so I didn't... William sounds like the name of a king.
Right.
To me.
That's the same reason I went with Tom Baudet.
Do you ever adopt the classic poetic lifestyle? Do you wear a beret?
I can't tell you what I'm wearing right now because we're on the phone.
Yeah.
But, no, I try to be inconspicuous. I really don't have a distaste for poets who announce themselves at 50 yards.
Right.
You know, here he comes, you know, with the beret and the cane and the cape and the whatever Michigas is part of the outfit there. But you can spot him from a mile away. It's just like a billboard. I'm a poet. I'm flashing. No, I try to fit in.
Yeah.
I try to make the poems eccentric. I don't want to look eccentric.
Now, here's the thing. I actually made a little joke about this, but it's true, which is that poetry per se has fallen out of favor. Nobody wants to read poetry. Everybody's bored by poetry. But everybody loves music, popular music, which almost always has lyrics, which are almost always a form of poetry, right?
Well, music is public, though. I mean, you put it on, you can, many people can listen to it at the same time.
Right.
Whereas poetry is usually the intake of poetry is solitary and private. It's you sitting in a room with a book open. But, you know, the real test is to read lyrics without music. You know, if you got everybody off the stage, like all the musicians,
yeah.
and the three girls in the back in the satin dresses,
yeah.
they have to get off the stage, too. And you just have to get up there with a piece of paper and then read your lyrics. They're not going to hold up.
Well, dude, mm-hmm. I think you're going the wrong way. You don't want to take that away from them. You want to get that for
yeah.
yourself.
Yeah, you need the...
You need some backup singers, a guitar.
Okay, I need the girls in the sequin dresses.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now I know it's missing in my act.
Exactly. That's my point.
Billy, this, Tom, and I've seen your act. In fact, I own 4 books of poetry. Walt Whitman is one, and the other 3 are yours.
Oh, nice.
And so I'm a bit of a fanboy here, but I just want to say that what you do with poetry is rarely done. Is you almost all of your poems have a punchline of some kind, and I gotta believe that that makes poetry so much more approachable for people.
Thank you. I'm smiling now.
Yeah.
You can't see me, but I'm smiling.
Well, your poems they tend to be things you've done or seen.
They're accessible. Yeah, they usually start out very straightforwardly. And plainly, I think it's good not to make demands on the reader too early. But as the poem goes on, I want the journey of the poem to lead into some interesting places. I sort of like the idea of Dorothy, you know, that the poem begins in Kansas and maybe ends in Oz.
Right.
But I want a lot of poems start in Oz, and I think that puts people off.
Yeah.
They don't want the flying monkeys in the first right. line.
When did you first decide that you wanted to be a poet?
It wasn't a single decision. It was just really following a compulsion to write poems, which started as a child, really. But we all write poems as a child.
Oh, yeah.
We love, you know, as children love the ingredients of poetry. And then they go into this tunnel that we call adolescence. And when they come out of it, they hate poetry.
Well, when I was an adolescent, and I'm sure this is true of, let's see, this is NPR, 98% of our audience, I wrote very, very sad, melancholy, self-indulgent poetry.
I did too.
Right. Well, I wanted to ask, was your, since you are now a successful and award-winning poet, do you feel that your self-indulgent adolescent poetry was better than average?
Well, we're all born with 200 bad poems in us.
Really?
This is statistically proven. And middle school and high school is a good time to get rid of those. But I wrote this, I believe, because this is what I was reading, I believe that poetry was 2 things. It was hard to understand, but one thing you could understand is that poet was miserable.
Yes.
So I pretended to be miserable, and it's very easy to write poems that are hard to understand. So I was a pretty happy kid, but I put on misery because I thought that was the way to play the game.
Really? So you were actually a happy kid?
I had a great childhood. I was an only child, so I had the whole backseat of my parents' car to myself.
Yeah.
For one thing. And finally, I read poets who were not so miserable, in fact, humorous. And they gave me permission to release what I was repressing, which was this sense of humor I inherited from my father.
Right.
Have you ever recited your poetry to get lucky with somebody?
I've recited to like hundreds of people at a time. But
how'd that work?
It didn't work to me. It didn't work out.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not whispering it in somebody's ear, no.
Well, Billy Collins, it is a pleasure to talk to you. We've asked you here today to play a game we're calling...
I Can Feel It Coming in the Air. Tonight!
So you're Billy Collins, poet. But what do you know about Phil Collins? Arguably greater poet. We're going to ask you 3 questions about the guy who made a lot more money than you. writing verses. If you get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their voicemail. Carl, who is poet Billy Collins playing for?
Billy is playing for Susan Morville of Ann Arbor, Michigan.
All right, Billy, you ready to go?
Okay, and what's the category?
The category is Phil Collins. You know who Phil Collins is?
The Genesis guy.
Yeah, the Genesis guy, okay, and solo career of some repute. Here's your first question. Phil Collins made a name for himself as a show business legend long before he rose to the top of the pop charts, as when he appeared in which of these? A, British ads for Ivory Snow detergent playing the happy bare-bottomed baby on the box. B, the movie Chitty Chitty Bang Bang playing an angry child who storms the castle at the end. Or C, the Pink Floyd album cover Animals appearing as or inside the inflatable pig.
Whew, wow. I'm going to throw out number one.
The Ivory Snow ad?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm going to have to say the B or number two.
That would be the movie Chitty Chitty Bang Bang?
Yes.
You're right.
Oh, wow.
Phil Collins was a child actor, and he says he was cast in the movie and was in the scene when they stormed the castle at the end. But Baron von Bomberst's castle. But he says he was cut out because he had a bandage on his hand that the director didn't want in the film.
Well, right. I didn't know that much about it.
I have
right.
learned so much about Chitty Chitty Bang Bang on this show over the years.
Well, we basically keep returning to it. There's an endless font of information about that movie. All right.
Good.
Phil Collins, not just a musician, he's a Renaissance man. In addition to his musical talents, he is also what? A published expert on the Battle of the Alamo, B, a champion competitor in male rhythmic gymnastics, or C, the world's foremost collector of Phil Collins memorabilia.
Let's see. I'm going to throw out A again. I think it's B. I think it's gymnastics.
You think he's the competitor in male rhythmic gymnastics? I would love to see that, but believe it or not, the answer is A.
Oh, it is.
Yes, Collins has collected Alamo memorabilia for years, and he is the author of The Alamo and Beyond, A Collector's Journey.
Wow.
Okay, here's your last question. Phil Collins' song, Against All Odds, the title song for the movie of that name, was nominated for an Oscar, but he did not get to perform the song at the Oscar telecast. Why not? A, he insisted on not starting the song, despite it being a live broadcast, until he, quote, felt the moment. B, in rehearsals, every time he sang the lyric, "Take a look at me now," he would look at the camera and wiggle his eyebrows. Or C, the show's producers had no idea who he was and refused his offer to perform.
I'm going to go with A.
You're going to go with A? He insisted he wouldn't start the song until he felt the moment?
Felt the moment.
Because that's the sort of thing that Phil Collins would do?
Yeah.
He'd sitting there in front of like millions of dollars worth of equipment and people.
I'm right.
Are you going to insist on that? Because I can't stop you. No, it was in fact C. The producers didn't know who Phil Collins was. The producers sent a note to his agent saying, "Thank you for your note regarding Phil Cooper." And they ended up having some other person sing it. Carl, how did poet Billy Collins do on our show?
He needed at least two correct answers to win. For Susan Morville, he had just one correct answer.
I'm sorry, Susan.
Aww. Perhaps you can compose an ode.
A losing poet.
Yeah, exactly. Billy Collins is the former poet laureate of both the United States and the state of New York. His latest book of poems, a collection called Aimless Love, is out now. Billy Collins, what a pleasure to talk to you. Thank
Great.
You so much.
Thank you, Billy.
Thank you, Billy. Thank you so much. In just a minute, Carl tries to sign up for Limerick coverage on rhymecare.gov. It's the Listener Limerick Challenge. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. But right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Paula, this is a big week for scientific breakthroughs. A team of researchers at the University of Nebraska proved this week that men like to do what?
Have sex.
Yes, but that's not what this research proved.
Every research proves that. I read recently that men think about sex every 13 minutes.
I think it's 13 seconds.
Yeah.
I don't know how you guys get anything done. Always having to stop like that. Give me a hint, would you?
Hey, my research results are up here.
Okay, wait. I don't think I understood the last hint. My research results are up here. Is that what you said?
Yeah, that's what I said. You never heard that expression? Hey, my face is up here. My eyes are up here. You ever heard that? Never.
No. Why would anyone say that? I know
you would,
where
you
your face
would say is. That if someone were looking at you but not at your face.
Oh, men like to make you look at their face? That's ridiculous.
You know,
I'm gonna kid. No.
Peter,
we're gonna work this problem if it takes the rest of the show.
Have I not been looking at your face
no,
enough?
No, you have been, Paula. This is something,
yeah.
That phrase that I invoked in my
yeah.
hint.
Yeah.
Hey, my eyes are up here.
Yeah.
Is something a woman might say to a man if he was looking at her.
At her breasts?
Yes, Paula! Yes! The study proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that men like to stare at women's chests.
Well, who would do that study?
The University of Nebraska.
That's ridiculous.
You didn't seem to know it.
I knew it. I knew it so much that it was such a no-duh that it was University. What is their football team's name?
Like the Cornhuskers.
The Fighting. The Fighting. We already knew that. What?
Here's what they wanted to do.
Corn Huskers. That's they a
wanted,
ridiculous name
they
for a
wanted,
team. And people who support the Corn Huskers, don't you go calling up complaining, because we're not having one of you call up next week and make fun of us. That's a bad policy to invoke, by the way.
If I may explain, Paul. The good scientists at the University of Nebraska
yes.
wanted to understand how men and women
yes.
react to the visual stimuli of female bodies. So the first thing they did is they hooked up these men and they recorded where the men's eyes were looking and for how long as they showed them pictures of women. And the men sat there and said to themselves, why can't all science be like this? Unsurprisingly, the study found men spend significantly more time looking at women's boobaginous zones and their hips than they do with their eyes, right? Okay, this we knew. What was more surprising is that the study was conducted on women as well and had the same results.
What, that women looked at breasts?
Yeah, women are checking out other women's breasts and hips.
Oh, my God.
Just like men do. This is an observation that all the male scientists agreed is totally hot.
Now, why aren't I extinct? I don't understand. I don't follow the pattern of any other human being than I have never once looked at another woman's breasts. And frankly, I've never had to say to a man, I'm up here.
I think if you said to a man, I'm up here, he'd be puzzled. But that's another question.
Oh, what? Is my eyes are up here? Is
yeah,
that
your
what
eyes
you say?
Are up here. Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, well, I have had to say that. Just never had to say, I'm up here.
Yeah.
You know, unless I was.
Unless you were stuck at the top of a ladder or
exactly,
in a loft of some kind.
Precisely.
And they were looking for you.
Precisely. In a tree, for example.
If you climbed it, you couldn't get down.
Happened once when I was a kid.
And they were looking for you.
Yeah, got way up on a sapling. And it was, like, wiggly up there.
And they were concerned.
Scared to death. Had to get Mr. O'Donnell to come get me down. I remember saying, I'm up here. It's a rough neighborhood.
It was. Faith, as you know, on the show, we like to keep everybody apprised of the march toward the robot rebellion and our ultimate deaths at their mechanical hands. Well, this week's news, engineers have created a robot that can take the place of what human?
This robot will take the place of a specific human.
Or a specific kind of human. Not like a name, but a role that humans play.
Can I have a hint?
Yes. Yeah. Your Frappuccino... is ready.
Oh, no.
Yes.
I hope these robot baristas are going to have goatees.
They will, I hope. It is, in fact, the robot baristas are here. A coffee house in Texas is the first to use the coffee house kiosk, a robot that will make you all kinds of coffee drinks. You can then spill on its cousin, your laptop computer.
They've reinvented the coffee machine, isn't this great?
Well, they have in a way, but, you know.
Except with tattoos.
Right. It's amazing. We have robot surgeons. We have robot manufacturer machines. Now there's finally a job for robots who were dumb enough to major in English.
My eyes are up here.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. You can see Carl do his Elvis impression at our first ever show in Memphis, Tennessee on December 19th. And you can check out the latest How to Do Everything podcast this week. Mike and Ian tell you how to do the full Riker. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, my name is Lindsay Garrett, and I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Hey, we were just in Cincinnati last week.
I know, I was there too.
What do you do there in the Queen City?
I take care of the manatees, crocodiles, and alligators at the zoo here.
No kidding!
Yeah.
What a great job.
It is.
Oh, wait, I'm not sure I know what a manatee is. Is it the thing that looks, its head is sort of shaped like a comma?
It's a sea cow.
We've discovered, Paula, you're not good at describing anything's physical attributes.
Let me ask you, do you have female manatees?
You do have female manatees,
yeah.
Yes.
How would you describe their rack?
You know what? I've never, ever had that question asked in...
Exactly!
Yeah.
Their rack. That manatee's got a rack.
I wouldn't say they have any sort of rack on a manatee.
Yeah, they're rather aerodynamic there.
Yeah, they're pretty just round all over, males and females alike.
Lindsay, welcome to the show. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you'll be a winner. You ready to play?
I am.
Here is your first limerick.
I'm giving my armpits a squeeze, and I end up with cheddars and breeze. I don't have to keep any cows, goat, or sheep. I've developed some human-sourced...
cheese?
Yes!
Oh.
I know! An American biologist is working to bring us the world's first human cheese. You see, they use bacteria scraped from armpits, your armpits, human armpits, to culture brie or cheddar and a rind cheese, all of which goes great with a nice glass of sweat wine.
Oh, that's disgusting. We did a thing on donkey cheese on this show last year. So
yeah.
This is worse than
this
that.
This is worse than donkey cheese. Here is your next limerick.
As I trot and guard sheep, I look wonky. And my braying is noisy and honky. While dogs that go woof get a taste of my hoof, don't mess with this trained attack.
Donkey?
Yes, a trained attack donkey. Donkeys, which are basically dumb horses, can be trained to scare off the predators that go after sheep. They're called, quote, territory attack donkeys or flocking jackasses. Here is your last limerick.
The stock price of Facebook has jumped. Its omniscience just cannot be trumped. Like some god from above, it knows all about love, whom I'm dating, and when I'll get...
dumped?
Yes, indeed, dumped. Very good. According to a combined study from Facebook and Cornell University, Facebook knows when you're about to get dumped. Apparently, couples with lots of mutual friends are more likely to stay together, whereas couples with different groups of friends aren't. So if you want to make sure you and your partner stick together, cheat on them with somebody you both know. Carl, how did Lindsay do in our quiz?
Perfect game, Peter. Three correct answers. So, Lindsay, you win our prize.
Well done, Lindsay. Thanks so much for playing.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Faith Saley has the lead, Peter. She has 4 points. Mm-hmm. Tom Baudet and Paula Poundstone are tied for second. They both have 2 points.
All right. We have flipped a coin, and Tom has elected to go first. So the clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. 1 year after it hit, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie said that Washington was responsible for the delay in getting aid to victims of blank.
Hurricane Sandy.
Right. International Chemical Weapons Inspectors announced Thursday that blank met the deadline for destroying its production sites.
Syria.
Right. The chief of police in Toronto confirmed that his office has a video showing the mayor using blank.
Oh, crack cocaine.
Yep. Chinese officials are investigating to determine whether a car that crashed in blank was a terrorist attack.
Tiananmen Square.
Right. A woman pulled over for speeding in California was cited for wearing blank while driving.
I always get this question, you know, and it's just like for wearing, you know, two chickens and a duck on her head. I mean, how can you possibly know the answer to that?
Well, it got some press. It was Google Glass. An Ohio man risked his life to go back into his burning home to rescue his blank.
His go cup for his drunken street.
Yeah, it's actually he ran back into the burning house heroically to rescue his beer.
Yeah, see? No, that I get that.
I don't know. Carl, do you think he should get that?
He does.
Oh, wow.
All right.
Who's going to argue with Carl? Firefighters were able to rescue the family inside the house but couldn't stop Walter Serpent from going back inside for his beer. Serpent explained, I told them to get the kids out and everything, and me, myself, I was trying to get my beer out. I went back into the house like a dummy. Serpent successfully saved his beer from the fire, but in a tragic twist, killed the six-pack just a short time later. Carl, how did Tom do in our quiz?
Tom had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 12 points, and Tom has taken the lead.
Well done, Tom. Paula, you're up next. Fill in the blank. On Thursday, the FAA announced that it would now allow many blanks to be used during takeoffs and landings.
Electronics like the Nook and the readers.
Yeah, yeah, electronic devices of all kinds. 3 journalists at the News of the World pled guilty to blanking before the beginning of this week's trial.
Phone tapping.
Yeah, phone hacking. Rock legend and Velvet Underground singer and guitarist Blank died this week at age 71.
Lou Reed.
Right. Residents of Arizona and Hawaii were the only ones not reminded to set their clocks back on November 3rd because of Blank.
Daylight savings time.
Right. During a powerful storm this week, drivers in London had to deal with high winds, driving rain, and Blank.
Nannies in the air.
No. A giant 30-foot beach ball bouncing around in traffic.
Wow.
On Thursday, a Southern California town failed in its attempt to shut down a blank factory because the fumes hurt people's eyes.
It's a condiment.
Yeah, it's hot sauce. I'll give that to you. Police in Pennsylvania were able to apprehend a man accused of an assault at an Arby's restaurant by blanking.
I don't know how he assaulted. They followed the fries.
Exactly right.
Wow.
Very good. They followed a trail of curly fries. Arby's employees called police after the man robbed the Arby's. And just like Fat Hansel and Gretel, they were able to follow the man's trail of curly fries to a secret lair in a car parked nearby. Police say they questioned him as to whether he had stolen any French fries. And he said, Carl, how did Paula do in our quiz?
Paula had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 14 points, and Paula has taken the lead.
All right, well done. Paula, did you know the answer to that last one, or did you guess the curly fries?
I knew it, Peter.
All right then, Carl. How many does Faith Saley need to win?
5 to tie, 6 to win outright.
Here we go, Faith. This is for the game. Fill in the blank.
Very stressful.
On Thursday, lawyers for NSA leaker Blank announced that he had gotten a job with a Russian website.
Edward Snowden.
Right. During a speech at the Vatican, a little boy wandered onto the stage and hugged Blank's legs.
Pope Francis.
Yes. Cory Booker was sworn in on Thursday as the new senator from Blank.
New Jersey.
Right. On Wednesday, the city council in New York voted to raise the blanking age from 18 to 21.
Buying cigarettes.
Yes. Yeah. On Wednesday, companies in New York were able to order Blank.
Human cheese.
No. Free workplace cat delivery. True fact. Forbes announced this week that Vladimir Putin had knocked Blank off of the top spot on Forbes' 2013 Most Powerful People list.
Barack Obama.
Right. Not only is the music of Britney Spears good for making you get up and groove, according to the U.S. Navy, it is great for Blank.
Torturing?
No. Repelling pirate attacks. Merchant ships are blaring Britney Spears songs like Oops, I Did It Again and Hit Me Baby One More Time and Get Out of Here, You Mean Nasty Pirates, to ward off Somali pirates. The pirates hate Western pop music, proving that though they may be merciless kidnappers, at least they have good taste. Carl, did Faith do well enough to win?
She had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. She now has 14 points, and that's enough to be tied for first place with Paula Poundstone.
Well done. A tie.
There you have it.
Right on.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict who will be revealed to be the one person the NSA is not spying on and why. But first, let me tell you that support for our Chicago shows is provided by Hyatt Hotels in downtown Chicago. Booking information is at Hyatt.com. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the National Association of Realtors, an advocate for homeownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. Lumber Liquidators offering a variety of sustainably harvested flooring, including prefinished and stained, at 1-800-HARDWOOD. Pimsleur Language Program, celebrating its 50th anniversary, offering 50 languages and an app to learn them on. More at Pimsleur.com. And Subaru, where all vehicles are built in zero landfill plants. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover, Miles Dernboss, and Emily Ecton. Our CFO is Ann Nien. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. And the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Now, panel, who is the NSA not bothering to spy on? Faith Saley.
No need to monitor something that's always visible, so the NSA won't be spying on Miley Cyrus's tongue.
Paula Poundstone.
They will not be spying on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me's Philip Gotica, because every time he answers the phone, he says, "I want to thank you for giving me a call. I'm on the phone at home in the hall. If you're with the NSA, then instead I'm away and I won't be coming back till next fall."
Tom Baudet.
They'll stop spying on Al-Qaeda operatives after listening in on Angela Merkel chewing out Barack Obama, and all that terrorism chatter is just plain dull.
Well, if any of those people don't get spied on, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Faith Saley, Paula Poundstone, and Mr. Tom Baudet. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you right back here next week. This is NPR.